Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this week's Casterbras podcast with a K. We're going to focus on one particular subject this time round, and that is the coming novelisation by Gareth Roberts of Douglas Adams' Sharda. Although saying that we're going to focus on that is a little bit of a misdescription, we're going to just talk about Sharda in general. Now, if you don't know anything about Sharda, then it's probably best that you listen very carefully. It's a Doctor Who story from 1979 that was abandoned. It was partially made, but due to BBC strikes causing scheduling issues with recording of location and studio work, it was cancelled. In the 1990s, it was remounted as a video project with linking narration by Tom Baker, and that was released on VHS. And then around 10 years ago, it was recorded by Big Finish with Paul McGann as the Doctor in a timey-wimey, something went wrong when I should have gone to Sharda meeting with Romana, which kind of plays into the whole Time Eddie business in the Five Doctors. And this year, we get a novelisation of the adventure at last, something that Douglas Adams was always reluctant to do, apparently due to money. Guys, Sharda, there's a lot of it about.
There is. I'm still holding out for them to put it on DVD in some kind of way with new animations as well. So I don't think the circle's quite complete yet. You know, after this novelization, they still have to bring us a nice DVD of it somehow. But I personally, I love the old VHS and I love the Big Finish version.
What about you, James?
I think it's a little too much of it. I love Douglas Adams. I mean, I've always said that I always carry around in my satchel a copy of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, not out of some sort of geeky trend, but I just genuinely just love that book, and I just love delving into it. But I do tend to find some of his Doctor Who stuff very patchy, and Sharda is one of them, I'm afraid. It's nicely set, nice place to set, obviously pulling on a lot from his own experiences, but just very, very patchy. And I think if it had actually been produced, I don't think it would be held up as being one of the greats. And to have had about three or four different versions of it so far seems sort of strangely funny, given that I don't think it would have been one that would have, you know, as a story, people would have wanted to have seen three to four versions of.
I don't think that.
No, go ahead. Go on.
I was going to say, I don't think that it necessarily needs to have three or four different versions of it, but it's a missing Doctor Who story like any other. The only difference is that we can see, actually, it's not really a difference. You can essentially say it's just like the 60s ones where clips survive. You know, unfortunately, they just never got to finish this one.
No, I didn't mean it like that. I meant out of all the stories to have so much attention to, if it had actually existed, I don't think it would be a story that people would have been that bothered about having so many of. But yes, yeah, because it is a missing one, obviously, that's the reason behind it. I just don't think that it's just a story that I don't think generates. It feels patchy. It feels like what a lot of Douglas Adams does is he has these great ideas, but because of time, because of the nature of the shows, and actually even in some of his Hitchhiker books, they sort of just don't really hold together fantastically well, I don't think, sometimes. And I just feel Sharda is an example of that. It feels a bit dotty. But which are your favourites, then? Sorry to get off this Sharda bashing. I always seem to be bashing something. Which is your favourite versions that you've had?
I'll let you go first, Brian.
Me? Well, like I said, I definitely really enjoyed both the TV one and the radio drama. However, I will have to say that I definitely still love the original best. And I think partly that has to do probably with maybe a little bit of nostalgia, because when I was first getting back into Doctor Who, my friends and I were going through all the VHS tapes that we could buy or that were being aired on TV. And one of them was Sharda with Tom Baker's linking narration. And you know, we walked around, I can't tell you for how long, just, you know, quoting Tom Baker's narration of it, not just the actual episode itself, but we were walking around imitating Tom Baker. You know, we loved it. We just thought it was a great video. And having him set in the museum surrounded by all these monsters that he had defeated before, I don't know, something about that gives it a certain really cool feel. But I don't know, I love Doctor Who from the 70s. that was a very strong era of Doctor Who for me. And something about that story just still worked very well to me, even being incomplete. I just really enjoyed it.
What about you, James?
I don't know. I mean, I must admit, I never actually got through all of the Big Finish version. I saw it when they put it on the BBC website when Real Player was unfortunately in vogue, even though people wished it wasn't. And I watched it through that, and I didn't get all the way through it. I liked the idea of the McGann version. I thought it was a rather neat way to try and canonize a broken story.
Yeah.
I think I the one I saw was obviously the one with the Tom Baker linkage. And yeah, I quite liked that. I mean, I think Tom Baker always brings an air of something to anything, doesn't he? That's probably the most fantastic quote ever made. It really does truly bring something to anything. And I was listening to Power of the Daleks, that he does the linking narrations to.
I want to hear that.
Audios. And he does a good job there, because he does as the fourth.
Does he bring something to it?
He does. He brings he brings something to the anything that is Power of the Daleks. And the fourth Doctor is obviously a Doctor which spends a lot of his time sitting down regaling people about his adventures, because Tom Baker's obviously done a fair few narrations for stuff and for anything.
Regaling people in pubs about his exploits.
Exactly. Yes. And the Power of the Daleks is done in that way, as if he's there. Smoking a cigarette, drinking a beer, regaling an underage Adric as he sort of wobbles on the table about his time when he just regenerated into Patrick Troughton. And he does it very well. So yeah, I think that is my favourite, and that's no disrespect to the Paul McGann one. I'm sure that was done really well, but I think that's the problem with Sharda. Once I'd heard it sort of narrated it once, I didn't really have that massive urge to do it, because there's some really big ideas in it, isn't there? But Douglas Adams does it in a way where those big ideas actually seem fairly run-of-the-mill. I mean, you're talking about, you know, massive, you talk about Time Lord mythology here, you talk about prisons, you know, for the most dangerous people, you're talking about even other people, you know, TARDISes in the shape of rooms and all this sort of stuff, and it just never really seems to really doesn't seem to really explode on those points at all.
Yeah, I'll come back to that in a moment. I'll just give you my favourite versions. Probably the Tom Baker Lincoln fit. And I suspect, although, again, we'll talk about this later on, I think I'll enjoy the book, and that may become my favourite version. But probably my most favourite version is the version I was given a sneak preview of and then was eventually leaked onto the web, was the animated version with the voice artist doing Tom Baker. I'm not sure if it's the same voice artist we talked about a couple of weeks ago, John Guiler, but I'll put a link onto Casterbus for that. We did have that some time ago, and it was quite an astonishing performance, I thought. But no, I think possibly the book might turn into my new favourite. Just going back to what I was going to say, you were saying, James, about how there's all these different versions. There's lots of different versions of lots of things, but I think the problem with Sharda is the fact that neither Douglas Adams nor the original director have been involved with any of the other versions. So it kind of, it's as if it's lost its way or it's lost focus over the years, as it's each one slightly different and not in the same way that you and I were talking about Blade Runner the other day. Mm-hmm. Not different in that sense. It's not different in a sense that it works in a different way each time. It's different in a sense that different parts of it seem a little flabby and don't work quite as well.
That's something that I always felt with the Tom Baker version. They used music in it that were from the 80s Doctor Who, like from sounded like Sylvester McCoy's era. That kind of feel never sat right with me. That's why I would when it comes to DVD, that was another point I wanted to make. When it comes to DVD, I'd like to see them go back to try and replicate the music that was from that particular era.
Yeah.
And bring that feel back to it, even if they still just release the one on DVD with Tom Baker talking, narrating it, because I wouldn't mind having that still on DVD, even if they do finish it with animation in some way. I'd like to have the option to still see those bits.
What would be really good if they did the book and then they got Tom Baker to narrate the book as an audio.
That would be good, yeah.
And have him bring something to that to that anything, and that would be really, I think that'd be really quite powerful, because I think you're right, Christian. I think the idea of Sharda is really good, and it is very big, and I don't think the TV production, obviously how it was scripted, had to be scripted to the confines of a very low budget TV production, could never do it justice. If a book was allowed to actually perhaps expand a little from that confines, which every other version sort of still has sat within that structure, and sort of play a little more, but try and keep it in tone of what Douglas Adams is about, that could be a really powerful book that Tom Baker could narrate and make into something.
Yeah.
It is interesting that out of all the favorites that we had all considered, which was the best version, not one of us even mentioned the BBC webcast of, the Real Player one, considered as an option. Because I'll be honest, I maybe watched an episode of that, but I didn't like the little cartoons. I prefer, with the Big Finish version, or even with the narrated stuff, as you're suggesting with Tom Baker narrating the book one day, what I like is the imagery that it can put inside my head, is that I can see the real actors, I can see real sets, I can see real scenarios, yeah. Where watching the BBC cartoon version, and this isn't to be like a negative towards any kind of reconstruction work they're doing on classic episodes. I mean, that's they're doing a beautiful job there, and for some reason I do like that. But the animation that was used on Sharda was very still, kind of like paper figures being moved around. You know, it wasn't like a cartoon properly should be, I guess.
But so was Cosgrove Hall.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? Yeah. I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, but so was Invasion as well. I mean, I know you weren't trying to knock those, but I'm just interested in the fact that that hasn't bothered you as much, because it was a very similar style.
Yeah, but the thing was, Invasion actually has motion, and you could see people talking, yes. and it seems
more refined, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Definitely. Whereas the Sharda version, literally, it was just like the way classic Flash animation was, just layers of images just kind of slowly moving across each other. You know, there wasn't anything special about it. And the artwork style, it wasn't bad art. It was just very stiff and still, so it didn't have any kind of fluid nature to it that made me want to watch it. Whereas listening to the radio drama version, all the characters brought it to life, and the angle that you had mentioned before, with them not taking the original Sharda out of continuity, you know, like using the Five Doctors as an excuse to say that original Sharda now never happened and the Doctor had to go back and fix things. I thought that was a brilliant way to draw you into these two different versions. You didn't have to choose one if you felt one needed to be real. They both were real. I thought that was brilliant.
Mm-hmm. So, we've got a book coming out this month by Gareth Roberts. Do you think Gareth Roberts was a good choice to take the reins from Douglas Adams on this?
I've never read any of his books, to be honest, so I wouldn't be able to tell you.
You've seen his TV shows, though.
I have, but book writing and TV writing are very different.
They are very different. No, I would certainly agree with that. But if we talk about sort of like the tone of his stories and that kind of...
Yeah, I think because Gareth Roberts did The Higher Science, didn't he?
He did, yes.
And that is, while it's not Douglas Adams, the Chelonians, was it?
Yeah.
They do
yeah.
have a sort of slightly 70s Doctor Who feel. And he was incredibly good in The Missing Adventures with An English Way of Death, was it called? He did a series of those.
Like that, yes.
And he did a very good, not just in the tone, but in the structure and the way he broke it into four parts. So, yeah, I think he could actually probably be a very good person to approach Sharda, because he does get that era very well.
Okay. I dare say that our listener possibly hasn't read any books by Gareth Roberts. So if we compare perhaps something like The Lodger or The Unicorn and the Wasp with a Douglas Adams TV episode for Brian, what do you think of that?
Well, I guess the Unicorn and the Wasp kind of compares a little bit more with Douglas's work, but I'll be honest I hate to say it, because I hate to be rude about it, but Gareth Roberts' TV stories, they were always just good. They weren't fantastic. Mm. You know, whereas I felt very differently with Douglas. Now, mind you, I had issues with Douglas. Some of his ideas in Doctor Who, such as Romana's regeneration scene, certain things he just didn't seem like he was taking as serious as some of the other predecessors before him may have taken with this silly little show we love. But I don't know. I mean, I guess Unicorn and the Wasp has a kind of Douglas-y kind of flippant feel to it in a way. The Lodger seems more new to me. I don't know if I would compare that with Douglas at all. It seems way too new.
But one could argue, as one will, that a good writer will be able to adapt to the requirements of his client, of his mandate. And the mandate of New Who is not to write something like an old BBC show. And you could argue that The Lodger is in a lot of ways very much a New Who sort of style, which would fit within Russell T. Davies' era in a certain degree as much as it would Moffat. Or one could argue doesn't fit very well in Moffat's and probably might fit better in Russell T. Davies. I don't know. But that could be it could be hard to judge him on that. What I would argue people could judge, if they go to the BBC online website, I still think they've got some of the novels up there, including Lungbarrow, if you go into the archives, and including one of Gareth Roberts, Tom Baker's Missing Adventures, I believe, his follow-up to The English Way of Death is on there. Well-Mannered War's on there. I have to have a look on that. But I think one of his novels is actually there.
You know, and actually even going back to the Unicorn and the Wasp, when the Doctor gets poisoned and he's trying to find whatever it is that's going to expel the poison from him, that kind of thinking about it now, I've never really given as much thought till sitting here right now, but that kind of has a Douglas feel to it with all the ridiculous kind of things that he's putting forth to use. It seems very much like the nonsensical stuff that he used to write in Hitchhikers, you know?
I mean, probably like, I still say that's just a build up to a gay joke.
Has,
beer line.
Has Douglas Adams in you? I mean, I've not read all of Douglas Adams' stuff. I can never really think of anything where he's really managed to sort of push or intended to push any real true drama or tension. Is that an unfair thing to say? I mean, he's very much about comedy, and if you look at the 70s era, what he wrote was, and my God, the BBC website of Doctor Who is so annoying. Sorry, I'm just looking for the archive stuff. Is there anything that he's wrote which really carries any sort of dramatic impact? Because that was the problem I've always had.
I think Pirate Planet does. I think the last episode of Pirate Planet
does. I'll agree with that.
Do you think so?
The jump that they make to save Earth and wipe out the bridge, I think that does. I would say, though, that I think you're probably right with City of Death. I can't think of anything in there. I can't really think... You know, I mean, there's a good reason for saying that end of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy should be pretty like whoa, and it isn't as whoa as it probably could be. So I certainly wouldn't disagree with that. What do you think of Pirate Planet?
I like it as a bit of comedy. I like the character. I like the acting in it. I like the lead acting in it. I like, I think the pirates, I can't remember who plays him. What's the gent?
Bruce Purchase?
Yes, he's very, very good.
Yeah.
And he plays it just as to the tone that Douglas Adams would want. You can tell that's exactly the sort of thing that he was after. I think in some respects, Pirate Planet is an example of what I mean. You've got what is possibly one of the most atrocious crimes in the entirety of Doctor Who, bar the Daleks and people destroying the actual universe itself. People going around and actually destroying entire whole planets of people for the sake of this core, which is horrendous stuff. And that never comes across, really. I mean, there's a couple of times where Baker, surprisingly, actually, is one of the few people who manages to inject some of the gravitas in what's going on in episode 4. But that's really about it. And that's an example of it. And it's great. There's some really funny lines in it. It flows really well. It's an enjoyable affair to watch. There's nothing particularly deep to it, but it's good, wholesome laughs. But it does lack that baseline, that base tone to it. There's no real depth there, which you feel there should be somewhere in the writing.
I don't think there's tension there. You know, the whole race to get to the TARDIS and dematerialize and materialize at the same time as the planet.
It doesn't really come...
I do think that works.
I mean, Joss Whedon's a very good contemporary version of someone who can, given the right... show, say like Firefly, can do a lot of comedy, but he can rein in the drama when he needs to. And I never felt with Douglas Adams that I don't think it's he couldn't. I just don't think he really had that much interest in that sort of dramatic elements of storytelling. So,
what do you think, Brian?
Well, he did have in one of the last few Hitchhiker's books, he put a lot of emotion and feeling in Trillian and Arthur, as well as their daughter. kind of making them all come to these kind of life realizations. There wasn't
None of that happened.
No, that did happen. That was in there. And I thought it was actually
not a real
good
book. It's not a real book.
What do you mean? I'm sorry, am I making it up?
He doesn't like... Is this mostly harmless that you...
Yes.
I guess it was mostly harmless, wasn't it? Not the one before. I don't know. It was just... There was moments of that. And it was interesting, too, when they had... if I'm not mistaken, they had two Trillians going on. Could be mixing the radio dramas,
again,
right?
It didn't happen.
Yeah. Okay. Moving on. No, I will say, going back to the Pirate Planet, and maybe this is what you were saying though about Tom Baker being able to do this, which he did quite often and quite well. But there was a great moment in there when the pirate's trying to justify what he's doing, and Tom Baker just flips out and asks him, "What's it for?"
Yeah.
You know, and that was just that was one of my favorite Tom Baker scenes, because that was, he could make the comedy and the humor and all the silly stuff, believable and at the same time really funny. But when he did those moments, I mean, it made it right. It made it feel right. It was just so believable and so true, and made us see that the Doctor doesn't take everything as a joke. And he played them so well. And that was just really well played, that moment.
I have to say that the actual web novels that were the e-books have now been removed from the classic archives, which is
a
great pity, because the Lung Barrow, I do actually have somewhere stored the Lung Barrow contents.
I think it's possibly because they're trying to get them published again, though, isn't it?
Could be, which is a good thing. I'd rather Lung Barrow goes on the internet, on eBay, for like 80-90 quid, as if you're unlucky.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it sells that well, though.
Oh, I've seen it sell for that.
Have you? Oh, right.
Yeah. It was, well, because there's no print, I think, until they put it on the website. But there, Mark Platt put a lot of his musings over Lung Barrow, and I think Gareth Roberts did as well with I'm sure, was it Well Mannered War that he had on there? So yeah, it's a shame they're not on there, because that would have been a good example of showing some of Gareth's work.
You know, here's something, just bringing it back to Shada. I'm actually looking at the cast list for the TV version and the Big Finish radio version, and I understand that some people may have passed away within that time, but it makes me wonder why they didn't try and use as many of the original cast as they could. I mean, I know that they had approached Tom Baker for years many times, and he kept declining, which is probably why they did it with Paul McGann.
Mm-hmm.
But even still, if they were trying to make it seem like they were just kind of revisiting the events of the TV show, I would have thought they would have wanted to use as many of those people as they could. But it doesn't look like they've used anyone aside from K-9 and Romana Lila.
Isn't the guy the same guy? Chris Parsons. Isn't that the same actor?
No, they used Sean Biggerstaff in the Big Finish play, the guy from a couple of the Harry Potter movies.
Did they?
Yeah, whereas the original Chris Parsons, what's his name?
Daniel Hill. Yeah,
Daniel Hill, thank you, he did that.
Hornet's Nest, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, right, I thought it was the same guy for some reason.
So that's what I'm saying, like, I just would have thought, because he's certainly still with us, and they could have used him, and they could have just made the link a little bit closer, I think, if they had done that.
So should they then? Do you think really what should be done now? Baker seems to be far more into the Doctor Who fold these days.
Well, they'd have to record them both separately, wouldn't they?
Record what both separately?
What, with him and Lala?
Him and Lala, yeah.
Yes, you'll get maybe.
Yeah, but that's easy, though, because actually...
Oh, yeah, I know.
Most of the...
They might even use the stuff that she's already recorded from the previous one. So they could, could do it, yeah. In fact, if he does a novelization, someone could pull it up. I mean, someone might even be able to manage to do it from
what's on that?
From what he's already recorded and from the episode, as it was when it was released on VHS with the link in narration and the 2003 Shada. However,
that'd be awesome.
Probably worth mentioning that Gary Russell changed a little bit of it, so. He added some material to it, didn't he? Apparently, so.
What in the web, the
Big Finish web version? Yeah.
But it'd be great, because I mean, you could get them together, and it could just add a whole new thing, you know. So come on, Doctor, you bastard! And they could just let out their feelings within the play, and just give it a whole new sort of synergy that was never there before.
Which is funny, because you had talked about before that you didn't think that this was a story that necessitated so many different versions, yet here you actually seem like you you are liking this idea of doing a big finish with Tom Baker finishing this story.
Well, there is a part of me which feels through all these different versions that none of them have ever felt particularly complete or solid, even the big finish one, because it still feels a bit like it's playing a little too loose with the idea, a little too fan orientated in the idea. And there's a sort of temptation to say, oh, bloody hell, let's just have a final version. Tom's around. I'm sure Lilac can keep her comments to the commentaries, as she usually does, about Tom, and just get round to just doing a performance and just get it done and get it out there. And then we can just put the bloody thing to rest and move on.
But, what would you rather see? Would you rather see animation to finish the 70s version, or
no? I'm like you. I like having a bit of an imagination, and if I can't see the real thing, this is why I love the audios, the audio dramas, the narrative ones, and obviously the stuff like on the Lost Tales DVD where you can just listen to the audio track. Yeah, yeah. Is that you can picture it, and I don't find I need it. I mean, I'd have personally preferred Invasion to... I like the novelty of having the images on screen, and I like to see the art, the design going into actually doing a bit of animation and seeing what people can do with the material. But personally, I'd be quite happy just to have the audio track and maybe occasionally Tom Baker's voice popping in just to tell me something which obviously the audio can't.
I'll tell you what, that is what's actually really brilliant about the BBC audios of all the missing stories, how the audio still survives. They got companions or people involved with the stories, but the one that you heard with Tom Baker narrating it, I would love to hear that. Even if they used all the surviving doctors to kind of re-narrate the stories and not just Tom Baker, although Tom Baker definitely has a voice that you just want to listen to. Well, I would love that.
Or alternatively, yeah, it would be really good, and this is far too much work, but I love the William Russell, the Dalek, Exciting Adventure of the Daleks of the David Whittaker book, where you get it all from Ian's perspective. I would love to actually see a Companions Chronicles where they took a story, got the rights to rewrite the story from an actual specific point of view. So if you did Sharda, you did it entirely from Tom Baker's point of view or from...
You know, that's very interesting because... I thought for a long time with the new series, when they do the Dr. Light episodes, mm-hmm. I always thought a really brilliant idea, and they can't do it all the time, but it would work well for at least one season. Take a two-part story and do the first part from the companion's perspective and the second part from the doctor's perspective. Make them, like, separate the way they always separate the companion and the doctor, so you don't have to worry about them actually being together except in bookends in the beginning and the end. And I thought that would have been a great idea. See the same story from both of their sides, the things that they had to go through to survive and save the day. And so what you're saying, it's basically just what I was thinking. I would love to see that too. That would be a really cool idea for Companion Chronicles.
I think so. And I think I think that could really work, especially while you say you still got the actors around. And Especially if you could get some of the, I mean, especially if you did it with the later stories where you have a lot. Well, actually, no, you still have quite a few of the writers of the original stories, the very old classic stuff. If you could get the writer on board to actually write a, I mean, that's a hell of a job. I know it's just fantasy, but I mean, it would be quite good as a book then, wouldn't it? I mean, OK, maybe audio drama's not got the market, but to write books like that and have a couple of books which are written by the authors taking a different perspective on a story that they originally wrote. And see what they come up with.
Okay,
Pip and Jane Baker might actually find a good angle.
I doubt it. No. I've got a good angle for them.
Yes, I think you do.
Well, I'll tell you what we'll do. Because as we mentioned earlier on, Douglas Adams didn't do any novelizations of his own Doctor Who books. So I suspect he probably would have done now because there would have been more money in the pot for him.
As long as the contract gave him 10 years to do it.
Yes, and that as well, yeah. And plenty of sound effects as the deadlines went past. There's obviously other Doctor Who scripts by Douglas Adams that there's no reason not to turn them into novels. So although Sharda is Sharda, it's this big enigma, is there any, or are there any, or which would you have preferred to have seen first of Adams's scripts that weren't that were recorded in book form?
This is going to sound terrible, I know, but I actually don't really like them being turned into book form. I know tons of people do, but I just prefer watching the story. I really do. New stories in book form, that's fine, because it's something new, it's something different. I don't know what it is, just when books get turned into novel, or rather TV episodes get turned into novels, I'm just not really that taken with them.
See, you can tell you didn't grow up in the UK, can't you?
Absolutely. This is all we had, mate.
This is all we had, man.
This is it. We didn't have anything. We didn't have, we just had bread, floorboards, some butter, and Target novelizations to get us through the day.
Yes, you guys had it rough, I know.
We had candles as well, James. Did you not have candles?
Candles? We were lucky if we had candles.
Yeah, and he thinks
all
we're
I
joking
had was John Cleese.
He thinks we're
Graham
joking.
Chapman holding up a light. What?
I said Brian thinks we're joking.
But I mean, yeah, I mean, that was, I mean, going back in nostalgia time for me, I remember like being in my high school and being about 11 and going into the library and going to the to those rotating horrible perspex book holders and going through looking for every Doctor Who novelization I could find, because they'd all be scattered everywhere.
Yeah.
And that was an exciting thing, and because you'd never see, I mean, we've said this before, you know, there was very little data on these stories, very little photos or images you could get easily. Yeah. Unless Doctor Who Monthly decided to ordain you with some.
Yeah, no one was showing them. You couldn't watch them anywhere unless you knew people.
Exactly. Or, you know, I remember still going through, God, this takes me back. There was a supplier over here called John Fitton in the late 80s who was pretty much the premier mail order place for Doctor Who stuff. And I remember used to ordering, because the books off there about 99p. And I remember sort of getting a pack with The Face of Evil, Black Orchid and something else, and sort of sitting down to The Face of Evil and those opening passages which were in every Terence Dix book, you know, the bohemic man.
Yeah, the description of the Doctor. Just back. So he knows who he's talking
to. Well, yes, I think for his first chapter, he just had one of those big print ink stamps with the chapter,
totally, yeah.
And then he just stamped it on the page. The first page done. Many-sided control console. Yeah. So no, I don't know. I know what you mean, Brian. Now I'm idle. I don't really see the need for novelizations unless the novelization adds something more to the actual original story. Then I think it can be wonderful. Like The Edge of Destruction by Nigel Robinson. There's a totally different ball game. You know, Ian gets lost in the bowels of the TARDIS with just this thumping noise around him, not sure what's going on. The atmosphere in there is so palpable that you just don't get in the two-part episode. So if you're done like that, I think it can be worth it.
Well, James, would you have preferred perhaps City of Death or The Pirate Planet?
Again, it depends on how they were novelized. I would say both those. I think all of his stuff actually could probably do with a good novelization, because as I say, I don't think he really took Doctor Who horrendously seriously and enjoyed the bohemic element of Doctor Who, to coin a Terence Dix phrase. And that's what he focused on. So a book would probably have to look to try and strike a little more balance and could probably bring a little more gravitas to things like, Scaglione sort of kills people quite nonchalantly in City of Death, but it's not really... again, it gets lost in the humour, especially when it's hammily acted.
He's a Bond villain, isn't he?
He's a Bond
villain playing a Bond villain.
He is, absolutely. And Glover does it brilliantly. I love him in it. I love him for that. But if you're doing it as a book, it's like, again, I'm going to go back to those audio adaptions, but The Crusades by Whittaker and El Akir is written with such a dark level to him that's just not in the original script. I mean, he's told, they talk of him butchering children, you know, throwing religious people off roofs. And he's such a dark, nasty character to a point they just can't convey on the TV screen that he becomes something totally different. And that's through the novelization. So I think if they're done right, they're good. If they're done like Terence Dix, you might as well, no offense, Terence, because I do, they are very fun. They were fun for me to read as a kid. You might as well just go and get a script book, really, because he doesn't add anything that isn't already in the TV show, or he didn't at the time.
I noticed you were talking to Terence Dix. Have you found out the identity of our listener? okay. Well, it is Shard a month for Doctor Who fans, so that's our contribution. We'll be doing a few little Sharder featurettes on Castobras. So look out for those. But from myself and James and Brian, it's goodbye. Until next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. From the K.